Welcome to The Rachel Peterson Show, the place where we dissect social media strategies entrepreneurs are using to build their brand, go viral, and make a massive impact. Let's dive on in.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Rachel Peterson Show. On today's podcast, I am absolutely delighted to have somebody who literally makes me laugh until I cry. He has absolutely inspired millions to become ultra spiritual through his hilarious viral videos that include how to become gluten intolerant, videos that explain how to be ultra spiritual. You've got to check him out if you are not already familiar with, and if you're not, I do judge you a little bit, but if you're not familiar with the JP Sears, it's time for you to check him out on YouTube. He is wonderful, has millions of views on every single one of his videos that he produces, and let me tell you, this interview is a little bit unlike any other because I reveal some really, really funny secrets, and so does JP. So let's dive on into this episode. All right, JP, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
You're very welcome, Rachel. Thank you for being weird enough to have me on.
I don't know what you mean.
case in point, that was very weird of you, Rachel.
I absolutely love that. I'm so weird, to be honest. So I have been following your videos, as have most of my listeners, for a while. And something that I love is that you make videos that not only make fun of people, but they still feel welcome by them, if that makes sense. You know, like, for example, my mom is gluten-free, and I shared the gluten-free video with her, and I was like, haha, this is totally you. And she's like, yeah, that's totally me. So I see that people are finding an identity in these videos, and even though it's making fun of them, they kind of love it.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you experienced it that way. That's my intention. And I think part of it is I only make videos about things that are important to me and are in my life in one way or another, like the how to become gluten intolerant video. Like, I've been gluten free for 15 years. I think because I, at least my intention, and I certainly do my best to do it, I come from the energy, if you will, of embracing the topic that I'm making fun of. So hopefully when people watch the video and the topics in some way in their life, hopefully they feel that embrace. To me, that's really important. I'm not after cheap laughs at the expense of hurt. Humor has a light side and a shadow side. Light side is it can create levity. I think it can create self-awareness. I think it can be transformative, really. And then the shadow side is humor can hurt. We all know about the idea of like, oh, making fun of someone. Like, there is nothing funny about things that are funny when it comes to making fun of people. So I've had video ideas that crossed my mind. I was like, oh, that would make a good video, like it'd be entertaining and probably get good viewership. And I'm not going to do that because with a given topic, like I don't want to come from a place of condescension, judgment, bullying, intolerance, while wearing a smile and pretending like I'm not coming from that place, even though I am, because the world has enough of that stuff already.
Oh my gosh, you're telling me. So I'm a hashtag social media expert. I only say that tongue in cheek because all day I'm on social media and I get to see all of these trolls and the mean comments that people leave on my clients' profiles, on Facebook advertisements. There are a lot of mean people online. And so that's what I love about your videos is that it brings a different kind of humor, a humor that actually does lift up and unite.
Yeah. And in my opinion, there are a lot of mean people online. I think we all have hurt inside of us. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes what we forget is someone who's mean online, a troll, that is a hurt person. Yes. I mean, I've heard it said recently, it was beautifully articulated, that in a public setting, anger is simply how people express their fear. And I do believe that anger is always a symptom of fear inside, and we're afraid because we have unresolved hurt we carry around. So I don't want to become a hurt person who's out to project their hurt onto other people, i.e. a hurt person who's just trying to hurt other people as a way of escaping my hurt. It's never enough to escape it, yet a lot of people try. Nor do I want to, the trolls online, I think that's an interesting game to, what's the perfect way to deal with that? I don't think there is a perfect way. But for me, it's been very important to not engage with emotionally charged people through logical communication. It's just, it doesn't work. The logic just becomes dry wood that fuels the fire of their emotional outrage, because I don't think they're emotionally outraged about what they saw on Facebook. They're emotionally outraged because they're hurting inside. It's probably been there since their childhood, and they're just getting provoked. People hurt, people who are, again, we're all humans. I think we all have hurt, but people who are limited by their hurt, and I think we get limited by our hurt when we're unwilling to actually embrace it vulnerably. So hurt people who are limited by their hurt hate seeing other people live beyond their own hurt. When they see someone like you shining their shine, that can be very threatening, because that reminds them of what they're not doing for themselves. They're not allowing themselves to shine beyond their own hurt, their own self-limiting beliefs. So they want to cut other people down so they're not reminded, so they don't have a contrast to realize how much they're dimming their own light bulb. So anyway, my way of dealing with trolls, as I digress, it wasn't just rambling here at this point. I'm going to shut up within the next 9 hours, Rachel. But my way of dealing with trolls is simply not engaging.
Right. So that's something where I kind of go back and forth. I have a couple clients where their brand is a little bit more snarky. Their clientele is on like Reddit, and when they're on Reddit, they're a snarkier, crazy, really.
I like that word, snarky.
I like it too. And so with those people, you kind of have to combat snark with snark. And mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I do for some of my clients. But for example, with my brand, it's probably similar to yours. That's the last thing I want to do. I only want to uplift, you know? It's a different approach.
Yeah, and I like your open-mindedness of, first off, being in touch with what is the fingerprint of the brand of your clients. And if it's as such that the trolls' comments could actually be leveraged, where we have snarkiness in our brand, so let's get a little snarky with this snarky comment. I think that's a cool open-minded approach for brands that, that's congruent with.
Oh, and it's so much fun, let me tell you, to tap into that part of my brain that I don't use all day. I'm not super snarky. But one time I remember somebody posted a comment on a picture, and they said, "Ew, that girl looks like she needs a burger." And this was on my client's account. And I wrote, "Tisk, tisk, -1 for body shaming." And that comment, that response got so many likes from the audience, and they were like, "This is amazing. Yes. Way to stand up to a troll." It was really, really fun.
Yeah, very cool. I love that creativity.
Oh, it's just a blast. Well, speaking of creativity, you're kind of like the king of creativity. So my question for you, and I'm sure that a lot of people, I actually know that a lot of people are wondering this. When you first started creating videos, did you have an idea that it could blow up and become so big? Or was it more like, I'm just going to create this and put this out there and see what happens?
Definitely the latter. I would love to pretend like, yeah, Rachel, I am so intelligent. I just premeditated this path and these strategies that would really allow my brand to really exponentially grow. But nope. I've been the blind man stumbling along, and I like it that way. I don't like to make decisions based on what I think. I like to make decisions based on what I feel in this moment. So being the blind man stumbling along allows me to get where I'm supposed to go because my heart leads the way, not not the eyes of my strategic mind. And that works for me. And I love to, one of my heroes is Forrest Gump. I love to talk about him. And why I love to talk about him is because when it comes to creativity, and I think a lot of things, but creativity, brand growth, I think Forrest Gump teaches us valuable lessons that we forget. To me, he's someone who was stupid. I mean, literally, his IQ was literally low. I forgot what it was because my IQ is probably not high enough to remember what his low IQ was.
Oh, please.
So the character of Forrest Gump had a low IQ. So he's dim-witted and he was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Why was he brilliant? Because he didn't live in his head, the place of limitation. And I don't care how smart a person thinks they are. They might have an IQ of 180, but they're still limited. They're limited to 180 IQ points. I think our hearts are quantum. Our minds are limited, linear tools we have. They're great. I don't want to get rid of mine, but our hearts are quantum. So Forrest, he would follow his heart in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, Bubba would say, do you want to join the army? He's like, yeah, okay. He becomes a war hero. He becomes a football star because someone handed him a ball and said, run for it. So he followed his heart. He kept running. So I won't pretend to be perfectly aligned with my heart all the time. However, aligning with my heart the best I can in any given moment is very important to me. Partnering with my heart because it's never misled me. I've misled me when I try to follow my head, trumping my heart. That doesn't work for me. So, you know, when I started making videos, my head said, this is a bad idea. Like comedy videos would be terrible for business because I come from a background of doing emotional healing, client coaching, and whoa, doing comedy videos would be very discrediting to you, JP. Bad for business, says my head.
Right.
And my heart just kept urging me, do this, do this. Mm-hmm. So, comedy's always been a part of my personality. And I think my heart was just wanting me to be more authentic. And when I finally started to listen to my heart and allowing my creativity to be expressed through comedy videos, there I became Forrest Gump. You know, the not living in my head, yes. Not letting my thinking guide my way, but letting my heart lead the way. And wow, it's worked out well for me.
I will say it has. Now, thinking back, before you were ultra spiritual, before you were really in tuned with kind of yourself and your heart, and before you were self-aware, what did your head tell you you were supposed to be?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I went through many layers of it. So it took me, I mean, I was in my early 20s when I got into the realm of emotional healing. And it took me a while to get there because my head had kind of like the programming I experienced from my father, or, you know, I'm supposed to be, a businessman and productive and whatever, a bunch of money in the bank account. And I would just feel heavy and like I was dying anytime I try to engage with that because apparently my heart wasn't in it. And then, you know, once I got into the emotional healing realm, which was certainly a new breakthrough for me, certainly defied one layer of my head. So then I got into another layer of my head, which was a great progression. But that layer of my head basically said, I'm supposed to be like Eckhart Tolle. You know, have you ever watched any Eckhart Tolle videos?
No, I haven't.
So the guy is so informative and very boring. he's a very wise person, but he's very monotone. Very rarely is he smiling. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon. He is being himself. And in hindsight, I can see he's the only one who's supposed to act like him. So my head, though, for years was telling me I'm supposed to be like Eckhart Tolle, just serious all the time. Very insightful, but serious. And yeah, that was very misleading because that's not me. So it took a good number of years, I mean, a long time, for me to better honor who I am. I've got the insightful serious, and I've got the comedic humor. that's me. So yeah, I think, you know, our stories, I think it's something we can all relate to. Our stories of who we are that we have in our head are not correlated to who we really are. And our stories of who we're supposed to be are typically manufactured out of who we want to be. Those two kind of go hand in hand. And those two have zero correlation with the truth of who we are. So I think when we try to figure out who we are and live who we are based on the story about self we carry in our head, we'll always be misled.
Yes.
But I think when we can go more through the feelings and into the kind of the Forrest Gump land of our heart, wow, now we're actually calibrating with something very powerful, which would be our true self, not the story of self.
I feel like a lot of us tell stories about who we are or who we think we are. And a part of it is kind of finding your place in your market, especially as an entrepreneur. You almost sometimes, I think, in the beginning have to create a story before you figure out, oh, wait, that's not who I am. And this is something I like to joke about a lot, is just this idea of saying I'm a social media influencer. And you see it in everybody's bios. I'm a social media influencer. And you know, if you have to say it, maybe you are, maybe you're not. So I remember I was putting like, I'm a social media influencer, or I'm a social media expert, social media guru. And I was telling that story because I was like, I'm totally not. I have like 100 followers, but it was what I wanted to be. And then as I became not a social media influencer, just somebody who does it, I was like, oh, I don't need to pretend that. I don't need to try to tell that story. I'm just me, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I agree with that. To me, the message that I'm hearing you speak says we have to lose ourselves before we can find ourselves. We can't bypass that part of our journey. So having a story of who we are that comes up in our head, like, okay, I'm starting out. Here's what I'm supposed to be. Like, yeah, that's important. And I think it's important not to get stuck in it. But go through it, whether it's a few months, probably more like at least a few years. But I think that's very important. And I think one of the challenges with having like role models, people that inspire us, and you know, those of us listening, we might look at, you know, some of our favorite social media influencers, some with the biggest followings that are just doing awesome stuff. And we might look at them as a role model, and that's awesome. I think that can breed a lot of inspiration. And then the challenge with that, though, is not duplicating their way of doing it. But I think in the beginning, it's very natural for us to kind of, like you were saying, have a story. And I think stories are oftentimes constructed by who we look up to and or how we see them better. Mm-hmm. So we have our story that's like, oh, I should model them. And I think that's natural, but it's a process of, I think, losing ourselves so that we can better find ourselves.
That's a really eloquent way of saying it. I say it very simply. You have to follow the rules and then you can break the rules.
Oh, I love that.
Follow the process and then create your own. And that's kind of where you get to when you start to feel comfortable in your career. It's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that reminds me, Arnold Schwarzenegger once said, he probably said it more than once, but obey the laws, but break the rules. Mm. And then I love your wisdom. Follow the rules so you can then break the rules. I love that. And I think, you know, I know when I started off in my career, I tried to break the rules before I started following the rules. That is, like, I was trying to bypass. I was trying to get to step 10 before I even took step 1. And because step 10, you know, being in the place of breaking the rules, I think when we break the rules, we're breaking normal. And what we reveal, kind of like Clark Kent tearing his suit off, revealing the Superman.
Yes.
When we break normal by breaking the rules, we're revealing more our true self. And that's awesome. It's glorious. And I don't think we can bypass the necessary, call it dirty work, of like kind of losing ourselves, like following the rules. before we can like really break free of it.
Absolutely. And you followed the rules for a while in your career before you started the idea of comedic bits in order to attract a new audience. And I can imagine that some people were like, what are you doing? JP, what are you doing? Did you get that kind of feedback from your friends or your peers in the industry?
Yeah, I did. Not so much my friends, because my friends, people who know me at a personal level, they've always known the comedic side. And I think the friends were nothing but encouraging for me to bring that comedic side that was so appealing to them in a personal way, bringing that to the professional environment. So my true friends were just all supportive. But people who would fall more into the category of peers or followers, initially it was kind of like, yeah, what are you doing? Like, are you serious in this video? And it's like, okay, no. But yeah, so there was definitely some resistance and a lot of confusion. Yes. There isn't so much confusion anymore because I've just established the fingerprint of my brand. But in the beginning, when there was the transition from just the serious to serious and comedic, then it was like, I get so many messages like, JP, I don't know. Are you a serious or satirical? And I just answer, yes.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
That's like saying, do you have a left hand or a right hand? It's like, I happen to have both and a lot of other parts of me beyond that. So, you know, I think we love to categorize people. And when we can fit nicely into a category, we're in a nice little box. People don't have to think because they just associate what we're doing with something that's already familiar to them. But then when we break the rules, it's like we tear open the box, we jump out of it, and it can be like, what's the deal with you? I don't know which box of mine in my mental categorization to put you in. And I think when we can be in a genuine place of saying, I'm not a box, and I don't fit well in a box. I'll go in a box after I die. That'll be my coffin. But until then, I don't want to live in any of your boxes or any of my boxes. Thank you very much.
You know, I was thinking about that before this call, because I did some looking into you to try to learn a little bit more. And a lot of information about you is still kind of private online. But one of the main things that comes up on the first page, and I hope this makes you laugh.
Let's hear it. I'm nervous already.
It's so bad. No, it's not. I looked up JP Sears, and one of the first things that comes up on the page is the question, which is apparently asked all the time, is JP Sears for real?
That is so funny. I've never heard that before.
Is he for real?
That is beautiful. I love it.
And it's kind of cool because it's like, well, of course he is. He's a real person, you know?
Yeah.
When you were starting to develop your comedic style, were there people that you really looked up to? Or I guess a better way to frame that question would be, who makes you laugh hysterically?
Yeah. And I'd like to actually answer both of those questions.
Great.
With my comedic styling, I do my best to not look up to anybody. I don't watch much stand-up comedy because I don't want to be influenced, really. I don't want to be tempted to do things other people's way. I'm just much more into exploring the mystery of what is my way and how can I deepen and enrich my way.
Mm.
Because like when I, you know, the more, I think one of the temptations of mine, if I were to watch a lot of other comedians, I mean, the illusion is like I'm watching them. I think the reality is, because I'm a needy human being, I'd be looking for their approval. I'd be wanting to see, okay, comedians, how are they doing things my way? If I see them doing things similar to my way, I'll feel approved of. I'll feel validated.
Yes.
And there's a good likelihood I wouldn't see them doing much my way because their way isn't my way. So I could run the risk of starting to sell my soul for the sense of approval. Well, let me just sleight of hand, maybe even unconsciously, start doing things their way so that I'll feel more approved by, approved of by these other comedians. And with that said, comedians who do make me laugh, Bill Burr. Do you know who Bill Burr is?
I do. Yes, I do.
He is just a genius. His way is definitely my way. Not my way. I'm sorry. Sleight of hand.
It's your style. You like
it. His way is definitely different than mine, but he is such a genius with his way of doing it. So Bill Burr makes me laugh a lot. Mm-hmm. Louis C.K. I think is amazing. And I think also the legendary Dave Chappelle is just a genius. So, and I know there's so many other great comedians that I don't really know of, because like I said, I don't watch much stand-up comedy, but those three guys I mentioned, I definitely love their stuff.
Definitely. Now, did you ever take courses in comedy, or was it just, it just happened?
Yeah, I haven't taken courses in comedy. I wonder about that, Rachel, because I feel like I'm laying down on the therapy couch now. I wonder if I would be enhanced taking courses. And I also wonder, am I more enhanced by not taking courses?
Right.
I don't know the answer. All I know is, up to this point, I haven't taken courses. And I also know that as of right now, I don't feel interest in taking courses. I think implementing my craft is the best practice of my craft. And I would dare say doing is always a more profound learning experience than learning is. Learning in the sense of let me go take courses and learn. But I think when we're in the field actually doing the doingness of what we're doing, it always yields better results. I think we always learn more when we don't know we're learning compared to when we do know we're learning.
Absolutely. That's something I think about all the time. It's the idea of pursuing something better or pursuing a better way of doing things. And when you've built a following, I have a small little following. You know, it's bigger than 100 followers now, but it's not the millions of followers
you
have.
Your voice gets small. Be proud of your following. I don't care how big it is.
Little teeny tiny following. But they're amazing. They're wonderful people. And sometimes I feel a pressure, and you may have felt this as well, to become more polished or to be, you know, to have my hair and makeup done on Facebook Lives or to speak a certain way or be more eloquent or know more about something. When in reality, your following loves you because of who you are.
Amen to that, sister. I hope everybody heard. Can I
do you want me to say it again? I can say it again.
Please say it, sister.
So your following loves you for who you are. And if you continually pursue not to become better, but you're trying to perfect this imperfection that we are, suddenly your following is like, who are they becoming? I don't recognize this person.
And that, I hope every single person listening to this heard in their heart and their ears what you just said. I mean, really, amen to that. That is huge. And I think, you know, I mean, the message I heard you say was so profound. I almost don't even want to try to talk about it because you just laid it down with laser precision. But I'm needy, so I will talk about it.
Let's do it.
So the message you say is, if someone is a true follower of you, they are following you because they like you.
Yes.
They don't like who you think you should be. They like who and what you are. And I think there's also transient followers. I think the more we unapologetically shine our own shine, that we are not for everybody. That's right. Why nobody on earth has 7.5 billion followers. We are not for everybody. Mm-hmm. So when we unapologetically shine ourselves, will we lose some followers? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Will we have some people who would have potentially followed us if we were one way, but they're not going to follow us now because we are ourselves. Yeah, that's very true. And will we gain a crap load of followers who truly connect with us? Absolutely. I think when we are not ourselves, mm-hmm. we rob the world. We don't expose the surface area of who and what we really are so that the people who are right to connect for us, they can't get at us if we don't expose the surface area of who and what we are. If we're trying to just, you know, be someone else, be act a different way, we are hiding the surface area of self, and it makes it impossible for our true followers to connect with us because we're hiding ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of a fun lesson. I'm glad we dove. I'm making up words.
Did both, really. It was so profound. We did both.
We dived and we dove. We did both. Dived. I like that.
Is that what? Yeah, dive or dove?
Dove.
I think the problem is they're both right.
It depends on what part of the world you're in. Actually, I don't know that. I just made that up.
Yeah. No, I love that made up statistic. They say actually 3 out of 4 statistics make up 75% of all statistics. So I think it's important. And I think how it is, if you're above the equator, it's dove. If you're below the equator, it's dived.
Well, that makes sense because I'm in Texas right now. And so we're getting closer to the equator. And so I feel confused. My brain is, it's like a compass. You know, the compass goes over the equator and it gets confused.
Yeah. Texas is a you place know. To be in. Because of just that.
On that note, okay, since you have created so many hits, you produce hit after hit after hit video, and people recognize you. How has that affected, you know, going to the grocery store or going out in public, going to events? Are people stopping you and saying, oh my gosh, I know you.
Yeah. It has a big effect, actually. You know, for instance, 2 days ago, I was at the event where you're at now in Dallas, Texas. And I don't know, how many people are at the event? Like, is it 1,500?
I think it's around there. I think it's 1,500 or 1,600.
Yeah, so it is a nice group of people. So I was very blessed to have tons of people recognize me, want to take pictures with me, want to talk to me. And that really is a great blessing. I feel genuine gratitude seeing people appreciate my work and seeing people want to connect with me. I think it's wonderful. And and kind of like part of the effect is, you know, it's like I sometimes can't go places. Depending on my energy and the time I have, like, you know, like at the conference, like I didn't eat lunch because I knew like getting to where I would eat lunch, you know, if it's a 5-minute walk, it would take maybe 30 or 40 minutes.
Yes.
Because I'm not willing to shun people. Like, oh, I can't talk to you right now. I got to go eat food or, so, I mean, that's a little bit of a challenge with what is a great blessing. And
right.
Yeah, and going to places around town, the grocery store, oftentimes I will get recognized. And so, you know, it's been an adjusting period. It really has, both externally and internally. Initially, it was, you know, it was like a real spike in a thrilling way in my day. Like, wow, I got recognized today. That is freaking awesome. And I'd be pretty elated by it. And now after it happens, I don't know, more times than I can count, I realize like that's not a sustainable currency that will fill me up because I mean, tens of thousands of times, whatever it's been that I've been recognized, it's like, it won't fill me up. So I've learned like, it's great and it's not, you know, life changing, if you will.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think where I was going with that in my little bowl here is learning the consequences of growing myself and my following has it where, you know, there's times where I'll choose, like, I'm not going to go to a cafe or a coffee shop because I need to, like, I need to, like, be introverted. I need to be there for me right now. And I realize there's an amount of privacy I don't have when I go out in public. So if I need to be quiet, introverted, and self-connected, then oftentimes I'll just, like, I need to stay home. It used to be I could go to a coffee shop and sit there and be introverted, and it is, it can't happen anymore.
Blessing and a curse.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like some
jerk,
like, poor me, I have a big following. It is a great blessing.
Yes.
It really is.
Absolutely. I think something that's cool. So I had one viral hit, just one though. And after that went viral, somebody recognized, my last name is spelled really weird, and somebody recognized my last name and said to my husband, "Is your wife Rachel Peterson?" And they said, "I follow her work. I really like what she does." Now, this is the crazy part. So he comes home and he tells me this story, and I'm on cloud nine. Like, oh my gosh, I'm famous. This is so cool. Guess what? It didn't change anything. It didn't change anything. My husband still was like, "So what are we having for dinner?"
He didn't, he didn't build you a throne?
He didn't get me a chef. No, nothing changes. And isn't that kind of beautiful and weird, the idea that everything changes yet nothing does?
Yeah. Again, I think you have a great point. You have a lot of wisdom. You are 100% right. Nothing about who you are and who you are to the people who are closest to you in your life, none of that changes.
Kind of scary and cool, you know?
Yeah. It is. It is scary, and it is for me too. It's both, and I think oftentimes, you know, one of the archetypal dreams so many people have is, "I want to be rich and famous," and a question that we're never asked when we're 10 years old and we say, "I want to be famous one day." Nobody ever asks, "And what do you think that'll do for you?"
Mm-hmm.
When we give our delusional answer, we don't have anyone to slap sense into us, not in a violent way, but just in an emotionally awakening way, where no one tells us, like, whatever you think that'll do for you, it probably won't do.
Yeah.
So just know that. Just know your quest for fame probably won't give you what you think it will.
Yeah.
Is it potentially a powerful step of growth? Maybe, and maybe not. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm saying the things people think it will be for them are typically based on what they think it will be, not what it will be or what it is.
And I kind of love that. It's really cool. Now, did you want to be rich and famous when you grew up? Or what did you want to be when you were, let's say, I don't know, 15 years old?
Yeah, you know, I can't say that I had the dream or the desire to be rich and famous. And, you know, when I was 15, I just had no clue. What do I want to be? But when I was even younger than that, when I was, say, 8, 10 years old, I wanted to be a pro athlete, which is, I guess that would mean you're rich and famous.
Yeah.
So I think I'm self-contradicting. That's okay.
Oh, it's a beautiful dichotomy.
You know, when I was 8 years old, 10 years old, you know, I was a great athlete. And did I have superstar potential? No. But I was a great athlete. And before the reality set in of, you know, I'm not 250 pounds, 6'6", you know, that's what my young mind wanted to be. I want to be a pro athlete because I think sports were the first thing that I ever felt passionate about. And then by the time I was 15, I didn't feel passionate about sports anymore. And I didn't feel passionate about anything else. And I, yeah, and I'm grateful that now I feel very passionate about what I'm doing. So I think that's why, like, when I was 15, because I didn't feel passionate, that's why I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do or be. And honestly, that was a scary time for me. It really was. Like, I've always had the ability to have an inability to do things or learn about things that I'm not passionate about. You know, in the time of being 15 and then right out of high school, I would call that a curse. Like, it was just scary. Like, wow, what am I going to do? Am I just going to be homeless living in someone's front yard? Cause like, I can't motivate myself to do anything that I'm aware of right now, because again, I have the ability to have an inability to apply myself to things that don't feel purposeful to me. So it took me a while to find something that does feel purposeful. And I think I probably just didn't answer your question, Rachel.
No, you did. You wanted to be a professional athlete. So you totally did.
I remember my fourth grade, we had to do this project. So I would have been 10. And it was like kind of like creating like a bit of a sort of vision board, but we didn't call them vision boards in fourth grade. They were something else. So we had to like make it as though we're outlining our entire lives and everything from what's your career, how many kids married, all that sort of stuff. And we'd like cut out pictures from magazines to represent different areas of our lives. And I remember my career, I was a professional football player. And what else? It was, I think I was a professional tennis player too.
Oh, I love
even
this.
Though yeah. I've never played tennis, but I'm like, yeah, I would be a professional.
Oh my gosh.
And a professional bodybuilder, maybe a professional basketball player too. So like four professional athletics that I'm involved in.
Oh, that's have, it. You know,
I didn't have to my thinking at that point. But yeah, anyway, that I just, in this moment, I'm remembering that little career outline I did at 10.
Isn't that so funny to think back? I found, so I've journaled since I was 11, and oh. I have all the journals, so I get to go back through them and read them. Have you ever journaled?
No, but I want to read your journals.
I'll ship you the one from when I'm 11.
And I lied. I do journal.
Okay.
I do gratitude journaling every morning, and then on different occasions, I'll do like more full-on introspective journaling. But it sounds like it's not nearly as consistent as what you've done.
It's something I've just always kept. And if you're listening to this and you haven't journaled, it's something that I so highly recommend, even if you're just starting, just writing a sentence or two every day that kind of captures where you're at and your state of mind, because to be able to look back and see the growth or the lack of growth sometimes is really incredible.
Yeah.
But when I look back at my, I think I was 16 years old and I had one big goal in life. I just wanted to be a hot mom someday.
I love that.
I don't think I've ever told anyone this.
You weren't stopping at being a mom. You wanted to be a hot mom. I love that.
I wanted to be like pushing a stroller and like wiggling my hips the whole time. I wanted to be a hot mom. That's all I wanted. Isn't that so funny? Oh my gosh. But you were going
to be. That's like the, that is like best like answer to what do you want to be when you grow up? That's the best answer I've ever heard.
I know I said it in a class too. I guarantee you. Because I remember a teacher asking about it, and that was my only answer. So, oh, life is fun. But you were going to be a professional athlete.
Yeah. And I find it funny, like, obviously the world changes, and we're in a time where it changes fast. And I know when I was a kid, making videos wasn't really a thing.
Yes.
Like, especially, like, YouTube videos. And like, you know, when I was a kid, at least, can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, 27.
27. So yeah. And when you were a kid, there wasn't this thing called social media. So like you couldn't be a social media influencer. You couldn't manage and coach other people. So it's so weird. It's like when we talk about like, what do we want to be when we grow up, or what do you and I want to be 10 years from now? I think it's great to have like the story of what do I want to be, but let ourselves use that as a launching place, a place to inspire and motivate ourselves from, but also leave at least half the equation open to mystery, because we don't know what new brilliance will be in our lives 10 years from now. And I think the idea of what do we want now becoming a limitation for how we're living then is a curse. Right. So I think when we answer the question, what do I want to be, or what do I want to do, what's my dream, it's always best to respect the power of now. Let our answer be our answer right now, not become a life sentence prison that we lock ourselves in into the future. So I think a great strategy for us is, however we answer the question, let ourselves divorce the question tomorrow in search of expressing a more true, accurate answer to ourselves tomorrow and a year from now and 10 years from now.
So give yourself permission to change your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think changing our mind means change. I think change is one of the biggest fears of humankind. Our self-preservation instinct is so appeased by the familiar.
Yes.
Things being certain, not changing, we have a sense of control. But our self-preservation intuition is suffocated by things being familiar. I think our self-realization craves constant change, mystery, the unfamiliar, and that's very threatening to our self-preservation instinct. So I think we have to be willing to, at least psychologically speaking, be willing to scare ourselves to death in order to truly live our life. Do we want to be governed by our self-realization North Star, or do we want to be governed by our survival instincts that just want us to be comfortable, consistent, and familiar?
How beautiful, because this actually comes perfectly full circle to the beginning of our conversation. You have to lose yourself in order to find yourself.
Right on. I love circles.
I do too. Well, I think we should leave it off on that note. But where can my listeners learn more about you? Where's the best place to get in touch with what JP Sears is up to?
Right. And well, one of the latest things I'm up to, people can check out. I've got a book coming out, How to Be Ultra Spiritual. That's awesome. Available on all the places online. Right now it's in the pre-order phase. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Also have a landing page set up with some special offers that are designed into tricking people into buying it. That's
perfect.
What special offers are. So anyway, if you'd like to be delightfully offered a special offering, howtobeultraspiritual.com. We've got that set up. And man, I put my heart and soul into this book. I am very, very proud to be birthing it through my birth canal into the world.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
a woman, that metaphor. And so howtobeultraspiritual.com. And then all my social media handles are Awaken with JP. And Rachel, before we leave, I have to ask you,
yeah,
is being a hot mom still part of your vision?
Well, okay, this is where it gets awkward, because I'm a mom of two. So I can't
so
answer the first
half.
Thank you.
You're living the dream, sister.
So I can answer, I'm a mom. And then the other half, we can let all of the listeners decide for themselves. Please don't leave that in a review on iTunes. Or maybe do. It'll spice things up a little bit. So the dreams have changed. I'm glad that we can change our minds from our 16-year-old limited ideas. That's a good question. Well, JP, thank you so, so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, you're incredibly welcome, Rachel. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh my gosh, what a fun episode, right? I'm willing to bet that you had no idea that that was my life goal at 16 years old. And to be honest, JP's life goal really surprised me as well. He is such a blast. It was wonderful to have him on this week's episode of the podcast. And to learn more about JP, you can go to www.rachelpeterson.com/podcast. The show notes will be available there, and you can learn more about how to find JP's videos as well as his book that's coming up, How to Be Ultra Spiritual. My challenge to you is the same this week as always. I want you to take action, get social, and be prepared to make a massive impact. I'll see you next week, guys.